Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome an accomplished professional from the UK, Mildred Yuan. Mildred, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Mildred is a talent agent, a diversity advisor, and a coach. She has worked for the top FTSE 150 brands, and she's a competitive professional ballroom dancer and has represented the UK in 7 world and European championships. Wow. So, Mildred, before we talk about diversity and all the other work that you're doing, tell me about your own amazing journey.
Well, it's been a really fun ride. And actually, if I told my 20-year-old self that these are all the things I would have done 20 years on when I'm 40, I would have been like, you are absolutely joking. I was always very interested in dance and started out doing ballet training at my local ballet academy where I grew up in Austin, Texas. And, you know, my Asian immigrant parents said, no, you're going to university.
Absolutely.
So you're going to get an education. Actually, I'm really grateful to them that they wanted me to expand my mind and not just go down one path. So I did my undergraduate at Harvard. I studied economics, but I was president of the Harvard Ballroom dance team.
Wow.
Okay. And it's funny, but that probably has had more impact on my role as a talent agent than studying economics, although that does come in useful.
Absolutely.
And yes, organizing people, thinking about how to create a business around a creative product, all of that stuff, I started thinking about there. And I then went to do a master's at Cambridge, which is how I came to the UK. Then I had a lot of student debt. So I went into management consulting. And that was also great. The number of different people I met, the number of different companies I was able to work for. And alongside my partner and I also did the ballroom dancing competitively and professionally. We fit it all around our work, and that's what we used our holidays to do.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a hectic time, but I really enjoyed it. And then when we retired about, I think 11 years ago, I had to think again about what it was I wanted to do with all of my skills. And at that time, a lot of our friends who we had met around the world ballroom dancing, they were starting to take jobs on Strictly Come Dancing or Dancing with the Stars. You have, I think, in India and also in the US. And a lot of them would come and ask me about their contracts. And so this is how kind of it began. And at the time, I was interning at a really small literary agency. So I was doing kind of books and selling creative product that way. This small literary agency was acquired by United Agents, one of the biggest agencies in Europe. And I came with it. So there, all of a sudden, I had a bunch of just lovely colleagues that I could ask about contracts or any questions I had. And so slowly, I started building a customer base, starting from the friends we met while we were doing the competitive dancing, and then expanding out into choreographers and actors and directors, and now casting directors. So it's kind of a strange old journey. But
fascinating. Thank you for sharing it. And as they say, the rest is history, right?
Yes, it's still going. It's a story that I'm still writing.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about diversity now. How has your experience as an Asian American woman in the industry shaped your approach to diversity and inclusion?
I was thinking about this. And when I was growing up, because I'm a child of the 80s, I was going to school in the 90s. And in 1990s America, Chinese immigrants and other East Asian immigrants, they always called us the model minority, didn't they? And in a way, it meant that what that meant was you're very good at fitting in and collaborating with the majority group. So it was the idea you put your head down, you worked hard, you didn't cause any trouble. You were good at disappearing. And for most of my life, this served me really well. And I think it was only in the middle of the pandemic when we had Black Lives Matter, I realized, I thought, well, I keep waiting for someone else to step in and solve this problem. I can keep waiting, or I can try and be part of the solution. And it was really different for me to go step forward and go, hi, I'm here. I want to talk about this. And I want to talk about not just representation, but how minority groups operate in the industry, but also in the wider world. And at the beginning, it felt very, very scary. It felt like I was waving a flag, and you know, that's what my parents and everyone told me not to do. You know, stay hidden, don't say anything, don't rock the boat.
Absolutely. And I think that seems to be the advice a lot of people like you and me who have from Asia, not just East Asia, have been told. And maybe that's the reason for so much success immigrants have from this part of the world in the Western world. But I agree with you that it's important to be able to now start expressing your view. And therefore, my next question with you is, what are some of the biggest challenges you have faced in being an advocate for diversity? And how have you overcome some of these?
Well, at the end of the day, I think we're all human. We all grow up with all of our biases. We're not even aware of some of them. I have biases, you have biases. And I think what I have discovered is it's sometimes it's really easy to go, oh, well, you had that very unhelpful thought. And that makes you racist or ableist or something-ist, and you're wrong and you shouldn't do that. And I think it's about progressing the conversation to going, well, it's a result of being human. Like, we all have these unhelpful thoughts sometimes. And actually, a lot of them are evolutionary because they were designed to save us back in the day when we had tribes and had to stay alive. You had to recognize who was in your tribe and who was not. And I think it's getting over the knee-jerk conversation about, oh God, we're completely wrong. We've done it wrong. We've done it wrong. How do we fix it quickly? To having a meaningful conversation. Just go, let's go beyond the fear. Let's talk about how we can make this better for everyone. If you are a member of the majority group, taking a walk in the shoes of someone from a minority group that you don't belong to. If you're in a minority group, also understanding and taking a walk in the shoes of someone from a different minority group. And really thinking about it holistically and from the point of view of all of us being humans. And it's not right or wrong, or that we intend to hurt each other.
Absolutely. Great response. Great response. My next question to you, Mildred, is what advice would you give to companies looking to authentically represent diverse cultures and stories in their projects?
I think a lot of it is about listening. And what I said just now about taking a walk in someone else's shoes and experiencing the things that they experience that are different from you on a daily basis, and having conversations about that. And I think there is a way that we can all work together to validate and also tell stories from everyone's experience. And learn from it. But it does take a lot of time. And it does it does mean sometimes a lot of conflict. But I don't think we should be afraid of that conflict.
Well said. And within your universe of the talent agencies, what is the importance of diversity? And what could be its impact on the wider entertainment industry?
Well, the role of the agent is very interesting because we sit in the middle between the producers and then the artistic talent, whether that be the actors or the directors or the writers. And I think diversity is important when you interface with both of those groups. Because from a client point of view, clients who join the agency, if they are from a minority group, they want to feel seen and understood. And if they see representation from their minority group, even if, for example, it's not a one-to-one relationship, they're not represented by that particular agent from the minority group, they know that at least the people in that agency, they have someone to talk to who can see their particular issues and problems in a safe space. And the agents from a majority group have a resource that they can talk to. And then from our relationships with the producers, like producers, they think about audiences and how the creative product can reach new audiences. If it's theater, getting bums on seats. Same with film, you know, people who buy tickets at the box office and viewing figures for TV. And to access new audiences and people from minority communities, there has to be representation in all aspects of the chain to understand what stories these communities want to see.
Well said. Well said. So one more question relating to diversity, and then I have a few questions for you as a talent agent. Mildred, how do you see the role of digital platforms and social media in promoting diversity and inclusion in the creative industry?
I use social media a lot to interact with people. I'm on X, Instagram, LinkedIn. I think it's a really great way to connect with a really wide group of people. And even though I know the downside is sometimes we don't have the most nuanced conversations on digital.
Absolutely.
In real life. And I really love it when I first meet someone digitally or virtually, and then that translates into a great real life conversation. And we can take that on to do something impactful and different in the real world. But a lot of people I've met in the diversity space, I have met them online first. And I would never have met them if it hadn't been for digital platforms and social media.
Right. Very interesting. So let's now talk a little bit about diversity and your work as a talent agent. My first question is, how do you identify and nurture the superpower? And I've used one of the words in your own papers that you sent to me, the superpower in the artists and creatives you work with.
I think everyone has different strengths. And whenever I do talks for creatives or artists, I say, well, find your superpower. Figure out what it is that you can do so well and how you can contribute in a unique way that no one else can. And I suppose this is very, very similar to in companies where you talk about finding your USP, unique selling point.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that everyone is unique and different. And it's celebrating that difference and looking at what you can bring to the table. And it does range. Some people, they know what their superpower is and they need some help from me to articulate it, to communicate it. Some people, they don't know what it is. And we find a way to target it, to aim it, for them to like claim it for themselves. And sometimes it's just, it's not something that you would normally expect. A lot of people think when I talk about superpowers, they just, they think it's related to, for example, if you're a director, you're a really great storyteller, you have these skills. Sometimes it is, But then you also have creatives where, for example, they're really good at networking with people and making everyone feel included. That can be a superpower. Some people, they have a superpower where they make everyone around them better just by being on a project. So it's not always obvious, but I love talking about this stuff, helping people find it, and then helping them really play their superpower to their greatest advantage.
Fascinating. And what are some key lessons you have learned from representing world-class performers?
They're human just like us, but the thing I have noticed is that they don't tend to worry about the things they can't do. They focus and they have this laser focus on the things they can do really well. They know their superpowers. They play them effectively. And they have full confidence in the fact that this is what they're contributing to the world.
What an amazing insight you've given to all of us. They know their superpower and they know what they are good at, and, you know, sometimes to exclusion of all a lot of other things. My next question for you, Mildred, is what are your thoughts on the intersection of art and activism, especially in the context of diversity and inclusion?
Oh, gosh, this is one of my favorite topics. Because I really love it when art and activism come together. Not just for the sake of the activism, but when it comes together in something that's really powerful and people enjoy it. I think that's really important. And then the impact it has. One of my favorite recent projects that one of my clients was involved in the UK, there was this ITV series called Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, about the post office scandal. It's been going on for over a decade. And it's only when the ITV drama came out and everyone in the UK watched it that all of a sudden the government decided to do something. Now they're all looking into actually getting these people some compensation. They're overturning wrongful convictions. And they've been working on this for a decade, but it took a TV program, which seemed very ordinary, to get people to pay attention and actually do something. And not all projects are like that. I've seen other things which are more subtle. Like another one of my clients was part of a opera called The Abomination, a DUP opera about the life of Iris Robinson, who is a very, well, slightly problematic politician who did not believe in LGBTQ marriage. And that was a little bit more challenging. It was going, well, are we okay with this? Are we okay with the hypocrisy? And I really think art can drive activism in so many different ways. And sometimes it is uncomfortable. Like some activist art really makes you go, oh gosh, I'm not sure I want to think about that.
Right.
But when it does come together in a magical way and you tell the stories of people who have been struggling a long time, it can be really inspiring. It can really create change. And it's the reason why I'm in the business.
Fascinating. And my last question to you, Mildred. I'd love to get your perspective on how has the representation of Asian American individuals in the creative industry changed over the years?
I remember when I was a kid in the 1990s. I remember the Joy Luck Club when it came out, such a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a movie about families that look like us. And I remember my mom and I and everyone in our community, we all watched it, not just once, but like twice, three times. We talked about it all the time. And it was just this incredibly special thing. And we all really valued it. But there was only that one film. And now what I'm really pleased about is that I see Asians and Asian Americans, not just in Asian movies. Yes, you have Crazy Rich Asians, but you also have Simu Liu in Barbie. And you also have stories of Asian people where it's not about the experience of being Asian, but it's the experience about being human.
Correct.
So like the Jenny Han book to All the Boys I've Loved Before, they made that into a Netflix movie a few years ago. And I loved it because I was like, here's an Asian American girl talking about things that matter to all girls. And she happens to be Asian. We've really come on a long, long way.
Right.
And the other thing I've noticed is now I'm seeing Asian Americans in all parts of the industry and the process. We're directors, we're agents, we're producers. We are there in all parts of the process.
Correct, correct. That is so true. Mildred, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me about your own incredible journey. I was just listening with rapt attention, you know, Harvard, economics, you know, and I could fully empathize with what you would have gone through in the 90s that I went through in the 70s, where parents would say, study hard, get a job, you don't need to raise your head, and, you know, just keep doing what you're supposed to be doing. Thank you for speaking to me about so many different aspects of diversity in the creative industry. Thank you also for talking to me about talent management and so many other different aspects of Asian American in the creative industry. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.